This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'd like to welcome into our studio Lynn Stanier, founder of the charity Their Future Together, which works to improve and develop the lives of disadvantaged children in Sri Lanka. So welcome to the programme, Lynn. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sure I have this feeling, as well as being a very inspiring and interesting interview today, it might also be a bit tearful for some of us when we hear about your experience. So what made you actually get into this line of doing this amazing thing for all the children?
Well, it was an accident, really, because I had a very happy career in travel, and Sri Lanka was actually one of my destination areas, which I was a specialist, and I'd been there many times before the tsunami happened at the end of 2004. So I went actually as a volunteer about 5 weeks later.
Was it actually the tsunami that has caused these problems, or did they have these problems before the tsunami?
There were many problems in the country because there was conflict with the war in the north, which actually ended in 2009. But there were already many children in orphanages and many families displaced because of the war before the tsunami happened.
Yeah, because it's amazing, because on our television screens here we see lots of disadvantaged children in places like Syria and all sorts, but I haven't actually ever seen any from Sri Lanka. Is it sort of unusual?
Well, in Sri Lanka, what has happened is that many of the children are actually placed in state institutions, and really people don't know about them because they're behind doors basically, they're quite invisible and forgotten to the rest of the world. But in actual fact, it's not just Sri Lanka. Around the world, there's around 8 million children who are suffering in institutions that they don't have a voice because they're behind the walls of governments.
Mm. So when you first went over there as a volunteer, your charity wasn't happening then, was it? You just went as a volunteer.
Yeah.
And what did you get involved with when you were over there?
Well, initially, I just was involved in the actual devastation of the place, and there were no JCBs even in the country at the time. So literally, volunteers were just moving bricks and moving all of the debris. And I mean, it was when I arrived 5 weeks later, there was about 4 hours of driving through, devastation, really. There was a lot to do, but actually then somebody suggested to me, had I been to the orphanage locally, which I hadn't, and so that was my turning point.
Mm. And was it a shock to you when you saw what was in the orphanage? Were you expecting anything like that?
Not at all, no. I mean, I obviously had no experience of this at all anyway, but the horror of actually seeing those children, there were just so many little tots who were just absolutely terrified with their arms up, just wanting to be picked up and held. There were 4 or 5 babies in a cot, just really smelling, because obviously there's no way, there weren't enough volunteers to change them. They were hungry. The whole situation was completely shocking, and the conditions of this institution was really unbelievable.
So after that experience, you returned to the UK, and then you set up your charity, Their Future Today. So how did you go about setting up a charity?
Well, initially, I didn't have any intention of setting up a charity. I actually intended to just raise money, and there was an organisation locally who based themselves inside the institution, and I was planning on just raising money and sending it out to them. But actually then something happened. They were asked to leave, and this organisation were asked to leave, and basically the orphanage was put under police guard at the time, and I'd already raised some money for them, and so I thought, well, what am I going to do with it? So I went back myself to see how I could spend it.
And so that's when that led you to set up the charity?
Eventually. I mean, it took a while because, as I say, I had a career in travel, so I had no big intention to become a charity at all. And in fact, what I saw led me to feel that I felt slightly disillusioned in the word charity, to be honest, when when I was there. So I just thought I'll raise some money in future myself and make sure it's spent directly.
And how did you do that? You actually went over there yourself?
Yeah. Yes. So because of through my business, I had to return anyway at the end of that year, having raised some money. So I went back and made an appointment with the local commissioner, and I said to him that I've got some money here that I'd like to spend in this place. And he said, "Oh, well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you." And I said, "No, I shall manage it myself, and we will agree what I'm going to do with it, and I will do it." So I actually hired lorries, and we actually bought lots of supplies. We put in plumbing, electricity, washing machines, and then spent the money of that particular fundraising.
And now the charity has been going 12 years. And now the work you do very much is helping children from institutions. Like, I noticed your video on the website about the story of Anne-Marie, whose father died suddenly, and his mother was left with three children, couldn't afford to keep them and put them in different institutions. And she had one day off every 2 weeks in which she had to visit each individual child, which is just unbelievable. Mm. And then, but through your charity, you managed to reunite the family, and it was based on a true story.
Yeah. I mean, the very first child was, I think when I first went to Sri Lanka, I think I felt so overwhelmed by the need after the tsunami that I met so many people that had lost their livelihoods and loved ones and homes and everything, and I just felt like I wanted to help them all and realised that I couldn't. And so then I just kind of froze and thought, well, I can't do anything. But it was actually when I picked up a tiny baby in the orphanage on my first visit, and she actually weighed about 6 pounds, although I was told she was about 6 months old, and she stopped crying, and she was starving, and she just stopped crying and looked at me, and at that moment I just had this big feeling like I've really helped her. Although I've done nothing, really, and I just stopped feeling overwhelmed then, because I thought anything small that I could do after that, it would be worthwhile. So I think, it's always been very small steps, but it was in 2008, actually, that after going back regularly, they started to gained some trust in me, because they wondered what my ulterior motives were. They couldn't understand why I kept coming back, and it was difficult building relationships because the people would change. But eventually they told me that she had a brother in another orphanage, and I went and found him within an hour, and then found that they had a mother, and I found that the father had died at the time of the tsunami. The mother had given birth, had lost the home, lost her income.
Oh, my goodness, how
ghastly. So she put her son, who was then eight, into one institution, and her baby, new baby, into the other institution. And it was Pumi, the little girl that I picked up.
Yes.
And so my son, who I'd been volunteering with, he actually, when we knew that they had a mother, he took a holiday in Sri Lanka and then went to find the mother, found her in the jungle working, and said, you know, if you had the chance to have your own children, would you want them? And she said yes, you know. So then we bought some land and we built our first house, and they were the first family that we reunited in 2010. But that was when we realised that there were so many of these children who actually did have families, and you know, it was literally because of poverty the reason why they were separated.
And now what's very exciting is you're just about to start the first foster care pilot scheme to take 50 children from institutional care and give them the chance to live in a family.
Yeah, I did a training actually a couple of years ago in deinstitutionalisation, which I realised that actually, you know, however good you make any orphanage, it can never be good enough, because the children are not receiving even the most basic care of love and attachment, and that's impossible in any sized orphanage or institution. So the main focus then became on how to try to get them out, but without any systems in place in Sri Lanka, and there's no foster care at all, there's no Foster Care Act at the present time, we've had huge difficulties because we've had to sort of, you know, do all of the research and manage the everything ourselves. So when I did a training, I actually thought it would be good to bring that training to Sri Lanka. So we started a couple of years ago bringing specialists in who go around the world to talk to other governments about children in institutions, ending institutionalisation and providing alternative family care, including foster care. And having done that for the past 2 years, the government are now interested and they've invited us to work with them to provide the strategies and the solutions to actually start this pilot scheme.
Do you spend a lot of time over in Sri Lanka even now, or are you more concentrating on raising the money to send out there?
Yeah, well, I spend a lot of time here raising money, but I'm sort of directing and managing the projects there with a project director. So I'm there probably every 3 or 4 months. I need to see what's happening all the time.
So do you actually recruit volunteers from this country to actually go and work out there?
We're not a volunteer organisation. There are lots of volunteer organisations around, and again, voluntourism is another subject, which is another program altogether. But what we do have is we have a number of supporters who have been very involved in the charity over the last few years, and they like to go out and they like to spend some time with the children, and we do it on a very small scale. We're very careful about who we send, and actually we like to focus on professionals who can actually go and really contribute something to their whole health and childcare system.
Now, I know that you do a lot of fundraising to send the money out there. Do you have any say on what that money goes towards, or you just send it as a lump sum and get them to decide what the priorities are?
I can absolutely 100% assure you every single penny that I have raised, I have spent and I am responsible for, and I know where, I can tell you where every single cent has gone. So
so do you have, you prioritise, because presumably you haven't got enough money to do everything that needs doing?
No, I mean we have to, you know, take on a project that we know that we can manage. So we don't overspend, obviously. No. But
where do you get all the things that you need to, say, build houses and things like that? Do you have to import them from other countries and things, or do they actually have means of getting them over in Sri Lanka?
Everything can be sourced, pretty much everything now especially can be sourced in Sri Lanka, and it's so much cheaper to actually buy things locally, always has been, because if you actually send out anything you have to pay import tax, and it's not worth it. It's better to actually keep the local people, work with the local people and buy from them.
So have you got any fundraising events coming up that our listeners will be able to come and support?
Well, we've just had our major fundraising event, which is our ball at Hampton Court House, which we have annually. But we, at the moment, we're actually working towards getting some cyclists for our Prudential Ride London 100, which is on the 30th of July. And our riders, we usually have a nice celebration at the end. And if there's any cyclists who are willing to come and help us, then we'd be really interested to hear from
them. And how would they find out more about that?
Well, they can go onto the website, which is theirfuturetoday.com, and there's all the information on there.
Right. And if anyone wants to do a fundraising event themselves to raise money, is that possible?
Oh, yeah. We really welcome anyone who would like to join us in any kind of fundraising. And, we can help and we can provide material and all of that. So, yeah.
Can you ever see a time when you won't need to raise any more money because it will all be sorted, or is that going to be too far ahead to even think about it?
I don't think it's going to be in my lifetime, but, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, we hope that, particularly by sort of once we've actually helped the Sri Lankan government to introduce, say, the foster care policy, then we will spend less funds in actual on house mothers' salaries and therapists, and because we're wanting to encourage them to build the community services there. We opened a preschool actually last year, and that provides another choice to abandonment for families. And the model that we're kind of creating, which is really education as well, is we're providing school books to enable 2,000 children to go to school in the poor rural areas. And by doing those things, it means that they have got some hope for the future, that they won't end up abandoning their own children. So we're optimistic that we're helping them in the right direction.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show. So would you like to give us your website details again in case people want to get more information?
Yeah, sure. It's www.theirfuturetoday.com.
Okay, well, wish you every success with all your future fundraising.
Thank you very much.
Yes, fascinating. I bet you never thought all those years ago you'd be doing this, did you?
I never did, no.
Well done to you.
Thanks
for coming in.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.